The Business on RT Radio 1 with Ulster Bank. For when you're keen to know what Brexit means for your business, visit ulsterbank.ie/Brexit.
Well, one of the easing measures also announced by the government was that summer camps will be allowed to open. It's the main business of our next guest. But Dia Hearn runs summer camps with a difference, catering for over 9,000 children with serious illnesses in need of respite. Unfortunately, the charity she heads up, Barrettstown, won't be able to open this year unless testing is in place. But Dia Hearn, CEO of Barrettstown, you've managed to build an online offering for children very quickly. How have you managed to do that, or how have staff managed it?
Well, we're very fortunate. Our programme team, there are 20 of them on site at Barrettstown, and they voluntarily agreed to go into lockdown on the 20th of March. And that meant that we could ensure that we could continue to deliver the broadcast because they just weren't leaving Barrettstown and there was no risk of the infection coming into Barrettstown, which was fantastic. And in terms of building two studios on site, yes, we turned everything around within 9 days. We called in favours from friends of Barrettstown and we created studios in two buildings on site, and it's been absolutely phenomenal.
Now, what about funding, Dee? Anybody involved in any kind of social and charitable activity and all these kind of organisations, they're all worried about where the funding is going to come from, and in the future, is funding going to dry up? Where do you stand with all of that?
It is a very difficult and challenging time for the charity sector, Richard. For example, we anticipate that our funding this year is going to be down by over 30%. And that is because a number of our big fundraising events have had to be cancelled and a number of the events that third parties were running for us as well. There's no doubt our income is absolutely going to be down this year.
Now, when you look back on your own career, Dee, and you've had a lot of different and interesting jobs as well on the way to becoming chief executive at Barrettstown. But let's go back to the start. You're originally from Care in Tipperary, a very fine town which I associate with the castle, which I remember visiting a few times many years ago.
Yes, I'm a proud Tipperary girl. I'm actually a little bit disappointed that I mightn't get an outing to Croke Park this year, but I did grow up in Care in County Tipperary and I went to the local convent secondary school. And when I left school, many of my friends were heading off to Australia or heading to London, and I decided I was going to go to London because I thought at least if I get homesick, it'll be easier for me to get home from London than it would to get home from Australia. So I found myself in London, and at that time, marketing was the up and coming career and everybody was talking about marketing. And I decided that it sounded good. It sounded like something I'd like to do. So I decided that I wanted to work in an agency. So I got my hands on one of those directories that lists all of the agencies, and I prepared my CV and I sent it to over 200 companies and I got one phone call, and that was for a company called The Promotion Works. And I was very fortunate. I got offered a job and as a junior account executive, and I went on to become an account manager. It was really, for me, hugely exciting and great opportunities. But unfortunately, my mum passed away in 1989, and I was very close to my mum, and that really had, you know, was devastating for me. And, you know, I found that I could no longer stay in London. I was very homesick after that, and I just wanted to be back in Ireland and I wanted to be close to my family.
And you were quite young at the time. What happened to her, Dee?
Well, unfortunately, Mum was one of those people who had a contaminated anti-D blood transfusion, and she got sick and passed away very, very, very quickly. So it really was devastating for all of us. And I was the eldest, and my dad relied on me quite a lot at that time. And as I say, I was flying home from London every weekend, and I really just wanted to be back at home. So I dug out my CV once again and I sent it to all of the recruitment companies in Dublin. And I got a call one Friday afternoon inviting me to go for an interview for a job in Black & Decker. And I was delighted. I thought, this is great. I'm going to get to come home. And I put the phone down and then realised I knew absolutely nothing about power tools and that I was going to have to learn fast if I was going to get through an interview process. So I can remember that weekend in London going to lots of different hardware stores and asking lots of questions about drills and drill bits. And
you were fully drilled on the drills, basically.
Very drilled on the drills. And I got myself through that interview process and I got offered the job. And that was probably one of the first challenges that I experienced in my career, because it was a very male-dominated environment, and I was one female. I was the only female manager in the organisation, surrounded by a sales team of men. And I can remember I used to absolutely dread Sunday nights, because on Monday mornings we would have our, you know, weekly sales meeting, and I absolutely needed to know about every power tool, every product, every accessory, all because I wasn't going to have anybody sitting around that table on Monday say, well, what would she know? She's a girl. And the reality of it is, you know, they never made me feel like that. That was all me. That was that pressure, that lack of belief that I had in myself then. And but I survived. I got through it and learned quite a bit about power tools, as it turns out.
So did you feel in a way you were winging it during that period? Or was it a case of, I'm going to have to work a bit harder? And then you discover that you're as good, if not better, than anybody else at doing it, that there's no big secret to it.
I think I really just genuinely didn't have a lot of belief in myself back then, and I did have to work very hard. I can remember putting a lot of pressure on myself that probably wasn't necessary, that certainly my colleagues, my male colleagues, didn't do the same.
So after Black & Decker then, you went into property real estate with the Gunn Group, which was set up by Fintan Gunn.
Yes, it was. I did. I got a call from a recruitment agency asking me if I would like to go for an interview for the job of marketing manager for the Gunn Group. I was really inspired by Fintan. He'd built up a really successful residential business and a commercial business, and he had vision. He had a great vision for where the company was going, and we spoke about the possibility of setting up a new homes division, and this was something that Fintan spoke to me about. So I joined the Gunn Group, and unfortunately I didn't get to work with Fintan for very long, because unfortunately Fintan passed away. But then his eldest son, Pat, who had been working in the UK at the time, came back from the UK and took over the reins of the family business. And I was really impressed with Pat. He was younger than I was. He was younger than many of his peers in the property market in Dublin at the time. But he had huge belief in himself. He really believed that, you know, he if you wanted something enough, you could make it happen.
Did you feel that you were reading yourself into this sector? This is a whole other sector, different set of challenges, probably a very good time for the property sector. I'm sure things were going well. But did you have to work that extra bit harder?
I did at the start, but then it started to come a little bit easier for me. I felt that I was, you know, gaining a little bit more confidence in myself. And that was really down to Pat. And I could see that, you know, Pat believed in himself, and I could, you know, and because he believed in himself, we believed in him, and he was a great leader.
Now, at one stage, am I right in saying that part of the business was sold off, and there was a question there of finding the right buyer and finding the right price and getting the timing right? Were you involved in that?
Yes. This was the commercial arm of the Gunn business, and this was when the Gunn commercial entity was pitching for CBRE. So CBRE had bought Insignia Richard Ellis Gunn, and they were two property companies in Ireland who were pitching to become CBRE, and Gunn was one of those companies. And I can remember distinctly, back to Pat's belief, we put hours upon hours and days into getting ready for this big pitch. And then the date of the pitch was announced, and I'll always remember it was the 30th of April. And I remember the day distinctly because it was my daughter Millie's birthday. So I left Ciarán at home, packing party packs and collecting cakes and blowing up balloons. And I said, I'll be home at lunchtime, because the pitch was due to take place that morning. And I can remember driving into work and being so anxious and getting myself all geared up for this big pitch. And I decided to stop at a pharmacy on the way into Dublin, and I bought a bottle of Bach's Rescue Remedy. And I thought, right, if I give my colleagues a drop of this, they'll all be fine. So there was about six people involved in the pitch, and I can remember giving everybody a drop. And then one of my colleagues decided to knock back the rest of the bottle. So I sat there for the entire time the pitch was on thinking, oh my God, please don't let him fall asleep. Let this go OK. And thankfully it did go OK. It was great. And I can recall a couple of weeks later, I was travelling across to the west of Ireland to one of our new home developments. And Pat called me and said, Dee, we've won. We've won it. And he said, come back, we're going to have the mother of all celebrations. And we did.
Now, after Gunns, you moved to Treasury Holdings, which Richard Barrett and Johnny Ronan was a huge operation in Ireland, internationally, in China and everything.
Yes, I did. At the time, Treasury Holdings was one of CBRE's commercial clients, and Richard Barrett called me one day and he asked me if I would meet him for lunch and asked me if I would be interested in joining the organisation. And at this time, Treasury Holdings were the, you know, an amazing property development company that everybody was talking about around town and, you know, were very ambitious. And so I decided to take a leap of faith with Pat's blessing, and I went to work for Johnny and Richard. It was an absolutely, it was a roller coaster. It was so fast paced.
In what way, Dee?
Richard and Johnny were very ambitious. They were very driven. They were passionate. And they really encouraged every member of the team to take risks, you know, to step outside our comfort zones and to, you know, not to give up on projects. That was the one thing I learned from Johnny and Richard, that there's always a way to make something happen. Don't give up just because you hit the first hurdle.
So what was going to China at that time like? Because I know that, I think of the two of them, Richard Barrett had spent more time there and he was building up a commercial property and development business there. That must have been an interesting period.
It really was. Within my first couple of weeks in Treasury Holdings, I was asked to go to China. And they had partnered with the Shanghai government to complete a leisure and retail development on the island of Chongming. And the Shanghai government wanted this development to be completed on time for Expo 2010. And my job was to create a marketing strategy for this project. So it really was really exciting.
I'd say it was difficult because cultural differences, language differences, you're in the realm of marketing and yet everything about the market is so different.
It was. It was a real culture shock. I can, you know, there were some odd things that happened during my time in Shanghai. And I can remember, you know, one of the first things that I found very, very strange was, firstly, the Chinese people were lovely. They were really lovely and very, very friendly and very warm and very welcoming. But one particular day stands out in my mind. I was assigned a driver to take me to and from the various meetings that I had to attend while I was in Shanghai. And on this particular day, I was going to meet the head of tourism for Shanghai, and the driver took me to the building, but then proceeded to get out of the car and come to the meeting with me. And despite my best efforts to say, look, I'm fine, I can do this, he proceeded to come into the meeting room with me and he sat between me and the person that I was meeting. And I found that a little bit odd.
When you look at your own career move over the years as well, the different moves you've made, Dee, you've thrown yourself into various different jobs in different sectors. You've learned about it as you've gone on. For you, was becoming a chief executive at some point, was that something you had in your sights? Was that something, a place you felt you'd like to be?
Yes, it was. I always saw myself as a leader. It was something that I wanted to do. I thought it would be great to be responsible for an organisation and to be there leading on strategy and the direction of an organisation. And I'm very lucky that I got that opportunity with Bardstown. But I have to say, one of the lessons I learned throughout my career, and I learned it from Pat Gunn, was surrounding yourself with really good people. I have, without doubt, the most amazing team at Bardstown. They're professional, they work incredibly hard, and they make me look good every day.
Dee, you mentioned earlier about the idea of doubting yourself. Do you think that some kind of self-doubt can be an important attribute for a business leader?
I think it's important to, you know, always question yourself and put yourself under pressure. But I think when you're leading a team, it's important that they believe in you and that they don't pick up that you're doubting, you know, the direction that you're taking. You need to lead from the front. But, you know, I certainly, right throughout my career, I've never been one of these people who has been able to go home at night and not worry about work or not worry about decisions that I've taken. I do. I constantly do. And I think it keeps you on your toes. And when I joined Bardstown first, you know, it was a challenging time for the organisation. We had to make some very tough decisions. And, you know, some people ended up leaving the organisation and some people had to take on more responsibility. And for me, you know, that was a real stretch because I was delivering bad news, and the easiest thing in the world for me would have been to go into my office and close my door. But I had to face people, and I had to be brave, and I had to be out there, and I had to be explaining why this change was needed. And so, you know, while inside I might have been a nervous wreck, outside I had to, you know, demonstrate my belief in the decisions and the direction that the organisation was taking. And it was very important for me to do that.
Well, Dia Hearn, Chief Executive of Barrettstown, thank you very much for joining us on the programme.
Thank you, Richard.